You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website RickAckerman.com. He's speaking to us today from...
cold and wet Florida, South Florida. Yesterday was golf weather if you wore your windbreaker, but we haven't had many beach days this season.
Well, it seems in Vancouver every day is golf weather as well, if you're willing to wear your raincoat while you slog around the golf course. Rick.
Right, no worse. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, everybody's eye is on gold and silver just marching along, hitting highs that many people predicted 10 years ago, but they thought it would happen instantly, but it is now. What's the story? Let's take a look at silver first. Is that just a case of it likes to tag along with gold, so it's got to catch up, or is this really something that's going to last for a long time?
Well, I think that silver, which not too long ago was trading at 1/100 of the value of gold, the ratio was over 100. It came down to, made a little adjustment there, traded closer to 1/40 of the value of gold. And part of it is because the silver story is easily conflated with, it's not a monetary metal, although there is some idea that maybe it's going to get monetized now that it has real value. But the supply-demand story shades well into the industrial side. In other words, silver is used in so many things. Just a new battery-making process that seems to be well underway with Musk and Tesla. But so silver has so many uses, and you get these stories that, well, now everybody's using it in pretty much every electric component, and that's really helped to kick the silver rally into, well, ultra high gear if you look at gold and just say that gold has been in high gear.
Yes, and when they talk about the uses of silver, also solar. You need silver to make mirrors. Mirrors are a key part of solar power.
Yeah, they don't solar power, right? The mirrors in your home, by the way, used to have quite a bit more silver than they do. They're cheaper mirrors these days, but yeah, silver is being used, as the story goes, in pretty much everything. And you don't read about that story before silver takes off. Of course, it's the slackers that invent the news each day only come on that story when silver triples in price or quadruples or whatever. Then they start to figure it out.
And silver being the best conductor of electricity, not copper, if you want to have less resistance and less heat while you computize your electrons and turn them into data, you probably want to use silver instead of copper because of the cost of cooling those servers that are going to be in those big AI data centers.
Copper doesn't know that, by the way, if you've been watching it the last few days.
Oh, you need a lot of copper to carry it because silver's just too expensive to be wire.
Yeah, well, I think the nano circuitry may alleviate the demand for silver, but that's not an immediate prospect.
Mm-hmm. Now, gold, you have an interesting theory behind what's going on there.
Well, I think probably the best story that was going around about gold a year ago was that Trump really wanted gold at $5,000 an ounce before he could successfully monetize it. And, of course, part of Trump's grand plan is to monetize pretty much everything. But since everything in this great nation has been hawked six ways of Sunday, it's really hard to find something that you can't pledge as collateral to do even more borrowing. So that wouldn't stop Trump from pledging your home equity so that the government could borrow. And we talked about that before. I even half liked the plan on the condition that if Trump was going to come in and let the government take out a home equity loan on your house, that if they paid you a good interest rate on it, but also paid back the principal partially in gold, that would have been appealing even to me. I'm pretty skeptical about whatever it is the government is hawking and however, whatever shenanigans they're using to run up debt. But this sounded like a pretty cool plan. And so you can see where it would kind of dovetail now with gold at 5,000 bucks an ounce. The government, if it's going to repay you partially in gold, it will require a lot less gold. You know, gold has been revalued up above $1 trillion, the U.S. store. And it all becomes kind of suspicious, though, when you realize that a year ago there was this idea that we were going to take a look in Fort Knox to see whether the gold that the U.S. supposedly holds in its reserves was actually there. And because a couple good people were on board for that, Ron Paul being one of them, you'd think, well, maybe we'll finally get a look inside the Fort Knox vault. But for some reason, that never happened. And so gold has taken off, and it's gotten to a threshold where I guess Trump thinks it's such a good price, we got to cash in. So the big question is, who did the work? I mean, Trump said, look, I want gold's price up 5,000 bucks an ounce, but who's the person that accomplished that at Treasury, or let's say Treasury in concert with people in other whatever the opposite of an NGO is, who people very much buried within the inner sanctum of government. So it really is a great mystery. Don't expect the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal to sort it out, because I don't think they would even head down that whole path of gold being at 5,000 simply because Trump wanted it to be there. But it is there, and the movement, the steepness of the rally that it took to get it there has been extraordinary, especially when you look back over thousands of years of gold history and see that it's never done quite what's done here. But if you ascribe a purpose to it, somewhat sinister purpose, I'm not going to characterize mere borrowing as sinister, even though it has a bad end for all of us. But in any case, there is that whole side of the story that you only hear in the blogosphere. But I think there's there's definitely something to it.
When you said, I want to know about it. What's the secret word? Why are they doing this?
Well, you and I both want to know about a lot of things. But we never find out anything, really. And even when it seems like everybody's on board, like there was a time when everybody was on board to find out everything about Epstein. But how much have you found out? It's not like there aren't still questions out there. And I guess ultimately we never really find out anything about anything. In some cases you wind up sort of trusting whoever's out there in the blogosphere. You could do worse. I have some problems with the Tom Luongo. Some of the things he says seem pretty far out there. But if you want a good far out scenario for why things are happening, he is so far off the beaten path that he never lacks for interesting things to say. But we're not going to find out much of anything. And I guess it's a question of picking and choosing your bloggers as to which one is getting closest to the truth.
China and Russia have been snapping up all the gold they can find for the last 15 years. What kind of position is that going to put them in if gold is all of a sudden monetized?
They're fine. You know, it's one thing to focus on all the good things that it means for the U.S. with gold at a higher valuation, but yeah, for sure, our enemies are benefiting as well. China and Russia in particular, because they take gold very seriously. They've always thought that there were fatal weaknesses in the dollar, and even without those weaknesses, they still don't want to be dollar dependent. So China has been really cool about it. It's not like they get out there with an announcement about they're doing this or that with gold. But for all of the repression and oppression that the Chinese government practices against its own, Chinese people, they've never discouraged them from buying, from holding gold. So they're relatively, for all the inhibitions that the Chinese suffer in their daily lives because of dictatorial control, just being discouraged from owning gold has never been one of them. And of course, that differs sharply with the U.S. record, where back in Roosevelt's day, gold was actually confiscated. So the Chinese, they have an official policy that you're not going to hear about or read about as far as their own official gold reserves, but they've also allowed and encouraged the Chinese investors to accumulate gold. So they've got a pretty huge hoard themselves.
And there's nothing to stop the Chinese government from confiscating that gold someday.
No, they won't do that. They don't have to. It's almost the same as their, you know, they don't have to talk about the dollar status as reserve currency and how they would like the yuan to be the global reserve. They don't care. They don't want it. They don't need it. They don't need to be saddled with the burden, even though it comes with the privilege of seigneurage. They just sort of let things happen. They're more, as far as their currency system, they're more free market than we are.
Well, what about the BRICS? Every year they keep saying we're going to bring out this currency called the unit that will be partially backed by gold. Are they getting closer to actually doing that?
Yeah, and we've talked about that many times, well, because I just have to shake my head at how stupid the whole BRIC argument is. In fact, let's dispense with how stupid, with all the stupid arguments about something's going to replace the dollar. And it boils down to, and believe me, you bring me anybody that wants to debate this point, they're going to look like an idiot. The world, the financial services world, or the global banking system is far, it's the biggest market in the world. The when we include all of the derivative instruments that are used to hawk pretty much everything six ways of Sunday and to hypothecate the value of all stocks and all securities, it's a big number. I like to believe it's $2.5 quadrillion. But if you take all the real jackasses, like who's the guy, the New York Times, I'm getting senile, so I can't remember. Who's the Nobel Prize economist at the Times?
I can't recall myself.
All right. Well, I always want to confuse him with Larry Kudlow, who's definitely not a Nobel Prize winner. But anyway, you accept their number, like, oh, no, we don't want to double count any of these derivatives. They estimate very conservatively, let's say, $500 trillion worth of derivatives, but I really think it's five times that, because you have to double count things, because if any one of the links in the chain fails, the whole, you know, the double and triple and quadruple counted derivatives will be in that avalanche. All right, so if you accept $500 trillion as the value of all derivatives, or even that's still more than twice global GDP in goods and services. So it's accurate to say the business of planet Earth, the primary business, is shuffling paper. And as far as businesses, manufacturing, and trade and goods and services, and wine and cheese and wheat, they amount to almost nothing compared to the action that's there in the planetary derivatives game. So when you talk about the BRICS wanting to substitute some stupid currency, how do you do that? You know, how do you swap out a market that's trading in hundreds of trillions of dollars for some other unit that will accommodate that game? So that's it in a nutshell. So there's no way to replace the dollar. You can't do that quietly or subtly or without bringing about some financial calamity. So we're stuck with the dollar, and I don't care what the BRICS say or anybody says about the BRICS. There's not going to be another currency. No, there's nothing else that can handle the global financial shell game other than the dollar.
Was it Ben Bernanke that you were thinking of? With the Nobel Financial Prize, Ben Bernanke, Douglas Diamond?
No. Paul, was it Paul? Oh,
it was a
you
Paul.
Know,
okay.
He writes just atrocious things in his, he writes op-ed in the Times. He's their economist. He's, and, you know, I'm spacing his name. It's like forgetting who was that guy in the movies. It's like Brad Pitt. Mm-hmm. I'm getting senile, so I can't remember proper names anymore. But Nobelist economist Krugman. Krugman.
That's there you go. Yes, it's Paul Krugman.
But Krugman would be one of those guys who in some niggling way says, oh, you know, these idiots who talk about the derivatives markets, they're way, way off. You know, it's closer to whatever. But whatever they say it's closer to, that number will always exceed actual global trade in goods and services. So again, I don't care what they want to whittle it down to. The main business main business on this planet is just shuffling paper with derivative instruments.
We'll have more with Rick Ackerman right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman. Rick, there's kind of an urban myth about the stock market, about how it does in the first week of January, and then for the entire month of January, predicts how it's going to do for the entire year. Is there anything to back that up, and does this year's performance of the stock market predict anything?
Well, backing it up is really 100 million idiots who think that way. When you get right down to it, January doesn't predict anything. The market just goes up, doesn't it? I mean, for most of the last, since 2009, 16 years, 17 years, it's just going up. So who's predicting anything when they look at the January indicator or the Super Bowl indicator or whatever? It's just, it's fun to write about, and sometimes these people are desperate for attention who write about it. But, you know, the only prediction you need to look at is that the market's going to go up like it usually does.
How long can this be sustained? Because everybody said this is the bubble of everything, and at some point something's going to make it crack. Or will it? Is it really different this time?
Well, it's different because it's the longest bull market by far that's ever occurred. It's just the most amazing boom. And I think if Trump had not been elected, if you're strictly a cycles believer, you have to believe that even if Kamala Harris had been president, we'd be having the same boom. And I know that sounds incredible, really, to be consistent, I wind up believing that myself. I think we would have had this huge boom, and the people who or buying the boom with your 401k money, they would be coming up with research reasons, fundamentals to support this idea that we should have this fantastic appreciation in all financial assets, real estate, all securities, and everything but bonds, of course. And so anyway, that if someone comes to me and says, well, what do you foresee for 2026? What, I guess you have to go with higher stock prices, higher everything prices. But as I implied earlier, you better watch out when they come at you with some scheme that has the word tokenization in it, because all that is just it's a distribution ploy. It's to take the risk away for operators like BlackRock and Goldman Sachs.
Well, I know you've never been a big believer in Bitcoin. Millions of people are, but it's one electromagnetic pulse from the sun away from being totally erased, isn't it?
Yeah, that's one of 100 arguments you could make about Bitcoin. That's not the one I make. I make the argument that Satoshi, or whoever the hell he was, when he created this blockchain money out of nothing, and I mean literally nothing, other than the electrical power that it took to solve the blockchain and produce a Bitcoin, there's nothing behind it. There never was. There still isn't. And even though I'll concede that Bitcoin should have a value because of the ability of the blockchain on which it's based to record financial transactions and to do it in a more or less secure way, that value the value it derives from that property is probably closer to $2 or $3, but not like $126,000, which is where Bitcoin topped, I think, if memory serves, or even the miserable $87,000 you would get for a Bitcoin today.
Also, there's concern that with quantum computers, somebody is going to solve the Bitcoin puzzle or the blockchain puzzle and be able to hack anybody's Bitcoin account instantly.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I guess the threat of that kind of quantum computing power in the hands of your run-of-the-mill 14-year-old hacker is probably at least a few years off, but certainly at the speeds at which quantum computers work, they can solve even impossible algorithms.
Wow.
and mathematical puzzles more quickly than you can believe. So one of those, of course, is to run however many quadrillion combinations of numbers and to essentially crack the crypto code.
And and quantum computer prices have come down super dramatically. I remember just a year or two ago, it was $1 million for one. Now you can buy one for under $5,000.
I'm not sure what I would do with it, but
well, the educational model, the Spin Q, goes for less than $5,000.
Well, it's we've never, for sure, we have enormous computer power available to pretty much anybody, certainly in comparison to what was there just 5 years ago, let alone 20 years ago.
Yeah. So, hello, hacked Bitcoin for $5,000. You could take a shot at it.
Well, I think, I think there's still a pretty big hoard of Bitcoin out there. And one thing we've talked about, why is Bitcoin coming down so hard? One of the reasons, in a story that, again, you're not going to be reading about in the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, is that when Bitcoin first took off, it was not mysterious or secret or even anything new to the CIA and a lot of the NGOs that were operating, particularly under the Democratic Party. It was just a good way to move sleazy money, dark money around. And so the CIA used it for advantage. We can only infer that they did. And when Trump put the squeeze on the huge global deep state NGO slush funds, it caused them to activate their crypto wallets, because here was that rainy day. They were getting choked off from their usual sources of funding, which come through in part hundreds of operations that the Democrats use to solicit funds for elections for candidates. So that money was choked off. So they really had to cash out their Bitcoin, and are still doing that just to stay operating.
Rick, any thoughts on what's happening with commercial real estate right now?
Well, that's where the tokenization is going to hit first. You know, and that's really where the light went off in my head about, I'm reading about tokenization in conjunction with the commercial real estate market. And the question is, and this is especially true, this will ring true to anybody who's walked around downtown San Francisco, like, what value? When they talk about giving the public a chance to invest in commercial real estate, I'm thinking San Francisco. And if you walk around there, I used to work on the stock exchange there, which was very centrally located downtown in a big, impressive building with these Ionian columns. And on a Friday, when the market closed for the week, you could go out and there were a million restaurants and bars. It was really a big celebration every Friday just to have the week finally at an end. And there was just so much activity down there in the vicinity of the stock exchange. And I'm saying going, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 blocks in any direction, including south of Market or to the Transamerica Tower. And now you walk around and there's nothing. There are a lot of vacancies on the ground floor, down at street level in these office buildings, a lot of commercial vacancies, but it's not completely gone. There are a couple restaurants still operate, a couple bars, but not much. But there are still a lot of shuttered street level storefronts. And if you go up one story in any commercial business in maybe a half a mile radius in downtown, there's nobody. There are no tenants in the upper stories of any of these office buildings. So San Francisco has been hit somewhat harder than most towns because things got so pumped there in the first place. But you know, when you hear about letting the public in, letting the public share in the value of commercial real estate, just keep in mind, it's just a huge, sleazy, scumball distribution scheme. That's all it is. And again, it's to alleviate, perish the thought that BlackRock should actually risk any money. So they're going to make sure that the public is the bag holder if we get to do this distribution of commercial real estate, quote unquote, value.
Rick, anything else we should be keeping a close eye on right now?
Yeah, everything. I don't know. The pace of things is so, it's hard to even think about it all. You could say, well, it's all chaos, and I think it is. I think that Trump's credibility is in that Wile E. Coyote phase where he's still going great guns and he's doing this and he's doing that. And he's still got some very avid cheerleaders out there. I mentioned one, Jeff Childers. I used to read him regularly, but he's become kind of worse than Sean Hannity as far as cheerleading Trump. And I'm by no means a TDS sufferer. I voted for Trump twice, and I'm not sure I wouldn't vote for him again if he ran against anybody I can think of that the Democrats would put up. But even so, he's just tried to do much too much too soon, and a lot of things that he's put in play are virtually doomed. You know, he's put a lot of mouth muscle behind this idea of affordability, and you know, it's Trump's thing to say, see, you're going to get affordability like you won't believe. Well, he can bring down the price of some drugs and a couple of things that we pick up at the grocery store, but the really big things, he can't affect them. He's not going to make real estate affordable. He's not even going to make healthcare affordable. And these things are going to get noticed, and it's in the nature of the broad cycles that many of the other things that he's put in play, problems that he'll solve are going to be unsolved, and it's all going to hit at the same time. And when it dawns on everybody that Trump is the emperor wearing no clothes, it's not going to be a happy day on Wall Street. The stock market is going to collapse. Everything's going to come down together. And I don't know really whether this will come about because of ebbing confidence or whether it will be an event that virtually undoes confidence in Trump's agenda. But he's got too many things out there that can't possibly work out. You know, making homes affordable for younger people, and even paying off student loans, the cost of health insurance, with the subsidies having been stopped. You know, there are extraordinary things happening in the health insurance sector, and it winds up that if you're sort of just above that threshold where you're not eligible for subsidies, you might have been paying, in some cases, people were actually getting Obamacare for free, and they will now face monthly family premiums of something like $4,000. And it's even more extreme for people who are paying a little bit, like someone whose monthly Obamacare was $400. They've been re-rated up to $5,000 or $6,000 a month, and for even the average unfortunate person, the monthly cost of healthcare will now exceed their monthly mortgage payments. So there's not much Trump can do about that, and the problems that it will bring about are going to very much be there in the next election. So it's possible that the election itself will be the catalyst for a market collapse, but it's coming.
Rick, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Well, always a pleasure. I hope I didn't depress anyone out there, but I don't have a good feeling about how it's going to end. But I do appreciate the chance to connect with your audience, Jim, and I look forward to our next conversation.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks. His website, rickackerman.com. If you have any questions for Rick or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Find us on X at How Street. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.